Catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got now.
FreedomSlips.com. Hold on to the edge of your seats because you are in for quite the ride. It's time for the Granada Forum Radio Show. Right now, live on air with your hosts, Granada, Wendy.
Hey, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Granada Forum Radio Program. This is Revolution Radio. We are the number one commercial-free, listener-supported internet talk radio station in the world. We're located at freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. That's revolution.radio. Today is April Fool's Day. It's April 1st, 2022. We don't know where the time has flown this year. It's like the month starts and all of a sudden it ends, and we are absolutely in disbelief that it's moved so fast.
By the way, Wen?
Yeah,
I have an announcement to make. I have now joined the Democratic Party, and I now identify as a woman.
Oh, good.
April Fools.
Sure, it's April Fool's. You got a dress on right now.
My God. Okay. Thank you very much for that, Nick. Thank you so much. Always lively. Thank you as usual.
Yeah, we need more jokes. That's right. I forgot about that.
Oh, my God. It's April Fool's. Yes, it is. And today is the 1st of April, 2022. We'd just like to say, if you'd like to go to the homepage, you'll leave equivalent to a cup of coffee. We appreciate to keep the paid programming on the air. If you'd also, too, like to check out the advertisement on Revolution. It's very reasonable, and you can also meet a lot of new people and friends. It's a lot of fun, so check that out, too, also on the homepage. Okay, by the way, we do have two guests. Well, we're going to call back one. Brian Hall from ConspiracyCon is going to be joining us. We're hoping that that's going to happen. Also, too, at 8 o'clock, besides Mark Gonzalez, we're going to be joined by a guy named John, and he wrote a book called School World Order, and so we're going to look forward to that, and we're calling him at 8 and Mark at 8, so we're looking forward to that, but we're trying to get also hold of Brian Hall. Brian Hall ran ConspiracyCon and for many, many years, and Jordan Maxwell, of course, attended, I think, almost every ConspiracyCon there was. So we hope to see Brian and join him, and how much fun can that be? And we're looking forward to that. We're going to talk about a few things, but I'm going to give the baton real quick to John. John, I just want you to know I don't know how to explain this, so I'm just going to say it real quick. And by the way, I want to thank my co-host and partner in crime who's got us on the air tonight, Mr. Nick Pearson. He was a Mr. April Fool's. Yeah, thank you.
That's Nicole.
Nicole.
We're all going to be cross-dressers tonight.
Nicole, are you?
I'm going to join the college swim team now. And beat all the women.
Oh, my God. College swim team now. Hell, off the football, baseball, basketball team going, yeah, coach, I identify as a woman. Like, get the hell out of the woman's locker room. come on. Oh, my God. Like,
oh,
you
no.
know, come on. Like, oh, my God.
Vanessa sack in there. Come on.
Oh, my Lord in heaven. Oh, my God. Okay.
That was a Saturday Night Live for sure. That was Jim Carrey when he was a muscle woman, you know?
Oh, yeah. Vera DeMilo. That wasn't Saturday Night Live. That was Mad TV.
Oh, no.
No, it was Living Color. Yeah, we
Vera DeMilo.
Vera DeMilo.
Oh, God.
So how do you get from being so, well, you have to have a lot of testosterone. Whatever it was. It was funny.
The horse noise, the horse lips and stuff. That was killing me.
Oh my Lord.
That's what we're seeing here, for real.
I know.
Okay.
Who would have thought that would have been more prophetic just as a comedy skit?
Predictive programming, here we go.
And, you know, I don't know how to say this, but two things I want to get off my chest, but have you noticed that all that's constantly, like, you know when we had COVID the dog, COVID the sidewalk, COVID the food, COVID the grocery store, everything was COVID. Well, have you kind of noticed that everything is mentioned this LBQGTA, this is it, or this is that's the dog, the tree, the store, they're mentioning it, like, I'm like, what are you talking about?
Are you kidding me? Did you see what happened with Disney just recently?
Well,
I must have missed that one.
Somebody leaked a Zoom call out of Disney, and it's something, you know, and I believe me, I've worked not for Disney itself, but I've worked as an outside contractor for Disney, you know, through a company that I worked for, and, you know, and just dealing with those people was nightmarish enough, and knowing who they were over the years, but they got, somebody leaked a Zoom call with Disney, and they were admitting that what they were putting out there in product, you know, is their movies and their theme parks and all that. They're grooming kids to be molested and being indoctrinated into the LGBTQRSTWXYZ.
This is crazy
video.
To think that. And this is what this is crazy to think. This, first of all, Nick, this is crazy to think you can take boys and make them into girls and girls into boys.
Well,
is just crazy. Look, if you want to wear kilts and wear makeup, hey, more power to you. I mean, if you want to wear heels, hey, more power to you. But you're a born a guy, it's cool. I don't know, probably want to dress as a woman. You want to wear lipstick, makeup, hey, more power to you.
But here's the thing, though. They're doing it to the kids. They're
right. They want them to do operations. Yeah. I'm thinking,
these kids who have no effing idea about any of this stuff.
Right.
They're convincing them that, like, you're not what you think you are. And there's multiple videos of this indoctrination coming out. But Disney has just been the latest one, you know, because they are such a huge company, you know, global company. And they come out and admit that, yes, we are indoctrinating kids into this lifestyle.
Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, face it, people are going to stop going to the parks.
There's been a bunch of people already saying Disney is dead and we're done with it.
I'm
sitting there going, like, I was saying this stuff a long time ago. You know, as much as I could out it, and after I got out of the business, I was kind of like, no, you guys don't seem to understand what Disney really is. There's a reason Michael Jackson designed his Neverland Ranch after Disney.
Right, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, there's this latest movie, by the way, this latest animated movie that came out with really flipped a switch on some lady who wrote a letter that became a viral thing. It's called Becoming Red or something like that.
What?
Something like that. I've never saw the movie. But whenever this little girl becomes sexually aroused or something, she turns into a red panda. Okay, right then and there, you ought to know that that's a symbol for Chinese communist propaganda. Okay.
Oh yeah.
But then, from what I read, I've never saw the movie. I don't intend to. But I was reading this woman's letter, and this girl goes under her bed, and she gets all hot and sweaty, and turns into a red panda, and finally she goes out in public as a red panda. And everybody said, oh, my God, it's a wonderful – it's like that has got to be one of the biggest trans propaganda movies I've ever seen. And it's all done through Chinese communist propaganda. But people aren't seeing it that way. Everything I keep hearing about it, oh, yeah, they talk about it, you know, if they're for it or against it, it doesn't matter. What they missed is the fact it's a red panda, Chinese communist propaganda.
Right.
Are
oh
you guys
God.
Not seeing this? It's like right. the big red star Mylar balloon floating up at the end of Wonder Woman 84. The whole movie was Chi-Com propaganda to begin with, and it's like, are you guys not seeing this, or am I the only one with my eyes open at this point?
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yeah, it's absolutely, you know, this is why I consider Joseph McCarthy a hero to the United States, and I don't give a shit what anybody says else. He was. He was the one pointing out that this is what's going to happen, and here it is happening.
Yeah, there's some major problems, Nick. Beyond words, my friend. Beyond words. Hey, John, also, too, real quick, Nick got
give us the weather.
Well, I'm going to give you the weather. Listen, I don't know how to explain this to you. And
so real.
Okay, we've had like weird weather. One day we had some sunshine, and then we had the clouds and some rain, and then it cleared up, and then they were coming us, and then the next day we had some chem, and then some clouds, and by like five or six o'clock it starts dropping in temperature. But the thing about this is, by 5 o'clock, what we've kind of found out by 5 o'clock. Is that if you're out in it for a particular time frame with the chem, by 5 or 6 o'clock, all of a sudden you can't keep your head up, and it's like you have to just sit down for like an hour, or you end up falling asleep for 2 hours or three. It's just kind of crazy. Has this been happening to you this last maybe seven to 10 days?
Yeah, it has. It feels like... like your blood left your body. You feel like you just beat. Like you're so tired. You've been doing something all day and you haven't done anything. I don't know. It's just very creepy. They're drifting them across the sky now. Now they're painting the sky. They're doing orange. I'm watching them right now. They're spraying long lines, making the sky look like there's a sunset there. Real nice job, but they're doing it. And I've always captured them spraying the sky. They're painting it orange. And people are going, look how lovely that is, darling. But it sucks because they're painting it like that.
Yeah.
And I got a video today. It's like a minute long, and I can't play it. But I have the link. And it's really easy. If anybody can get it,
go give it.
I mean, it's truth11.com.
Truth11.com.
Yeah. It's Deagle. And this was like from 2007. He's predicting everything, the shots, the whole thing. It's like a minute long. And it says, this is Dr. Deagle foretelling of the new world order via biopharmaceutical enslavement. I don't know if you guys can get that. I kept trying to click it, and it wouldn't. I see the picture, but it won't click. I don't know if you guys can see that or not.
Truth11.com, John?
Yes. And this is
maybe
Dr. Deagle.
Is working behind the scenes.
I'm sorry, maybe. Play Mission Impossible music. Doom, 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 doom.
That's a good one, John.
I know.
Are you working magic, Nick, are you? I think he muted, but it's okay.
They got him.
You know, I'll tell you something, John. A couple of times after, by the time it was like 6:30, I mean, I literally just kind of just took my shoes off. Then the next thing I know, I was out for maybe 2 hours straight, just boom.
That's what's happening to me. I'm taking naps when I don't even want them.
It happened to me yesterday.
Okay.
Did it?
Yeah, yesterday I was like, it was early. It was only like between 7 and 7:30, and I had to lay down, and I completely went to sleep, and it's just like, how the hell am I going to bed this early?
Yeah,
I know.
It's absolutely freaking crazy. I don't know how to explain it because. And now I can tell you something, too. This is kind of weird. I'll sleep for a couple of hours. I'll wake up, do a bunch of stuff that normally I'd be doing early in the evening, go to bed, get up about maybe 10, 9 or 10, depending on my work schedule, and start my day, no problem. But I just noticed between 5 and 7, I've had a hard time just staying awake. I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I'm having the same thing every night.
I'm not that old. I hate to break the news. Yeah, I'm not that old.
This is a different feeling. It's like you're being put to sleep. Did you get the Dr. Deagle thing?
Nick?
Truth11.com?
What did you say?
You got to hear that. I didn't send it. I couldn't get it. It freezes on my computer, but it was played for me today. It's like a minute long, and he talks. It's from like 2007, I think. But he's talking about what's going on right now, the pharmaceutical stuff. What's they're going to do? I was like,
do you have a
truth11.com?
Hold on,
truth11.com.
Yes, truth11.com, and it's and the title of it is, "This is Dr. Deagle." A decade for telling the new world order via biopharmaceutical enslavement.
All right, give me your
and I was just like,
if I can find it.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't get it to unfreeze. It was killing me. I don't think they want this one going because it was powerful.
And then we're going to try to get Brian on too, call him back.
All right. Where's Brian from? Do I even know him?
What's the name of the video? Dr. Deagle?
Yeah, Dr. Deagle. A decade foretelling the new world order via biopharmaceutical enslavement. Sorry, it's a long title. It sucks. But boy, was that an eye opener. I heard that today. I was like, that pretty much puts the frosting on the cake.
Wow. We're going to have to
call. Give me a sec to look for it.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's good, John. I have it here.
I just can't play it.
Hey, let me give you guys a little news, too. We'll talk about a few things. Tomorrow, wake up at L.A. It's in Venice, California from 4 to 10 p.m. It's tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah, wake up L.A., 4 to 10 p.m. It's in Venice, California. That's tomorrow.
Also, 4 p.m.,
4 o'clock in the afternoon to 10 p.m. at night. Next Saturday is that one for the mandate. It's in April 10th. It's going to be on a Sunday, and it's going to be in somewhere in Los Angeles in a park, but I don't know the name of the park, but that's what I've heard, April 10th. And that's for people to fight against the mandates that they're trying to put on people. And tomorrow is Wake Up LA, and that's from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. in Venice, California, so that'll be interesting. What else can I say? Okay.
I found the video.
Oh, you found the video. Okay.
By the way, is this when Deagle was at the Granada Forum?
No.
This is
something that he put out. So we're going to have to call him and get him on.
Yeah.
Okay.
This sucks because they played it for me over the phone. I go, send that to me. So I got it. And it just will not play. Everything else will play.
Okay.
Yeah, well, let me see if I can get this to play, and then if it does, I'll get right back on it. Give me a second.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Another thing I heard today is that they're going to bring the mask back so that we don't get slapped in the face by Will Smith. Did you hear that?
Oh, my God, please. First of all, I think it was a setup. I mean, guys usually deck up the guy.
You have to make fun of his wife's haircut first.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I just heard what that whole thing was about. It was a commercial for that. What is that disease with the hair? Alopecia or?
Alopecia.
Alopecia? Yeah. That was a whole commercial to bring it to the public. Bring it to the public eye.
Pfizer's coming out with a new drug to treat alopecia.
Yeah, and Pfizer sponsored the damn Oscars. Come on, man. This is a joke.
Oh, my God.
Well, here's the other take, because I've been kind of thinking about this, you know, all week, and God knows why, because I really hate the Oscars anyway. I hate Hollywood. But there's this thing, and I've seen it happen before, and I've listened to a lot of people talk about it, Jordan Maxwell being one of them, David Icke being another, Alex Jones, you know, you can run the list of names down. There's this thing, it's called ritual humiliation. When you are being indoctrinated in, you have to go through a ritual humiliation. We saw Taylor Swift do it when Kanye West snatched the microphone out of her hand. And
oh, that's right. You're right.
And so
all
I'm
those embarrassing
this.
Weird moments.
Yeah, I'm watching this thing, watching it happen. There's no way that Will Smith is going to commit an assault on camera in front of the entire world. Well, you know, however big that world is now, considering how many people don't watch the Oscars anymore. He's not going to commit that assault in front of the entire, you know, however 10 people are watching the Oscars anymore and not have a plan behind it. Considering if you watch the video, him and his old lady were laughing.
Yeah, they were genuinely laughing at the beginning of that.
He went up and smacked them. He was laughing when he walked away from Chris Rock. Caught from another angle, she was still laughing after the whole thing happened. It's like I'm like looking at this, going like, this looks like a ritual humiliation, indoctrination thing. And I'm like thinking to myself, okay, what did Chris Rock just get himself into?
I don't know. And the thing about this is, nobody was watching the Oscars, and as soon as that happened. The talk of the town has been it's been nonstop
all week.
Yeah.
Well, all you got to know is that Pfizer's, you know, brought the Oscars to us. I mean, there's a bit.
You know, you never know. Maybe Chris Rock's looking at getting into some deeper stuff.
I don't know. I think all of them have turned on us pretty much. All the people you wouldn't even think, Willie Nelson and all these guys. You'd think they were on our side? No.
Ooh.
Pushing the old shot. That pissed me off.
No, you don't get to keep your career if you're on our side. Anyway, I got the Bill Deagle thing to come up. So
come up, play.
Yeah. Is it the one-minute thing?
I have actually no idea how long this is.
It should be.
It's a little over a minute.
Okay, good.
It's about a minute and a half.
Yeah, listen to this thing. This is fantastic.
Give me a second here. You know, I've got all my state-of-the-art equipment all set up here.
Thank you, Captain.
National health care. Now, most people say, we've suffered so long. Canadians have got national health care. The British have got national health service. We've got to have national health care. And Hillary Rotten Clinton tried to bring national health care in with the electronic medical record, the EMR. The EMR is an electronic choker chain on your doctor that if they don't do what their Nazi Dr. Mengele commanders tell them, they'll yank their license. They'll yank their chain. They'll prosecute them and they'll imprison them. So a large and very powerful leg of the New World Disorder is your doctor. Because most of the really bad things they want to do to you, including implantation of chips, vaccines that are psychotronic that will rewire your brain, vaccines that will insert DNA to alter your genetics, vaccines that will cause cancer, vaccines that will program so that you will actually be sensitized, I call brain tenderized, to ELF technology that can transfer thoughts and insert them into your mind and your body and control your very physiology using scalar technologies. All of these have been developed, and your doctor will administer them. Just like the big pharma drugs that are administered that are slowly killing our elderly population and turning them into demented fools. Okay? If you think that politics is corrupt, medicine is 1,000 times more corrupt. doubt because the victims are either dead, dying, or wish they were.
How long ago was this?
Like 2007.
Wow.
I think. It was a while ago. And I was like, holy crap.
Well,
that was even before Alex Jones started coming out with it was actually around the same time that Alex Jones came out with Endgame.
Endgame. At the forum.
So they knew. They were trying to tell everybody that this is what's going on.
Yep.
I hadn't heard this Deagle clip before, though.
We're going to have to get Dr. Deagle on the air. I know we scheduled him, and we had nothing but problems on the Tuesday show. So I will I'll start putting a few phone calls into him. And, you know, Nick, you know, we need to talk to him together and make sure that we have all the proper numbers. So if something happens with one of the numbers, we have to call the other number.
We've always had that issue when we've tried to get him on the show in the last few months. So there's always an issue getting him with the number going through, but then he will call me while we're on the air and say, hey, yeah, I'm supposed to be on the air. And it's like, yeah, I know. I can't get through. I don't know what's going on.
Gee,
I don't imagine what that could possibly be by any chance. But, no, I hadn't heard this clip from Deagle before, but it's...
I hadn't either. I heard the other one, the one where he's working on the pilots and all that.
Right,
you know.
But no, it's amazing how many people knew that this was coming and nobody listened to him because, you know, that the term conspiracy theorist was tossed out there so much.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Oh, my God, it just made you give up. It's like every
you know, time, here's the thing, though. This is 2022 now, and for all the conspiracy theorists out there, including us, apparently we get lumped into that group, aren't we tired of being right?
I'm really tired of it. That's why we're tired all the time. We're always right. I'm sick of it.
I'm gonna make a couple small little quick announcements so we can try to get Brian on.
All right, let me try him again.
Try Brian again. The Stu Peters show on 3/30/22. It was on Wednesday. We wanted to say this. This was on Stu Peters. We're gonna try to find the clip and play it, but if we don't find it, we'll probably play for Tuesday show, but we've been talking about this for the last 18 months to 2 years on our program, and it's come full circle. And Stu Peters did a piece on it, and I heard it because Mark played it for me last night. So this is it on 3/30/2022, which happened to be Wednesday. He played a clip, and what it is
your call has been forwarded.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We'll try to find out. We'll try him at 8, and if we can't get Mark and Brian, we will reschedule Brian at a time for him that's convenient for him, because we just Brian Hall ran ConspiracyCon. You can check out his website, ConspiracyCon.com. That's ConspiracyCon.com, and there's videos, guys, of Jordan, of Michael Tessarian, of Stuart Swadlow, people that you do not understand, it's so hard to get. So this is before its time. So anything from the Conspiracy Con, check it out, conspiracycon.com, and check out Brian Hall's website. It's just unbelievable. It's a double try.
You know, they should stop calling it Conspiracy Con and start calling it...
Well, listen, this was done...
They should start calling it the We Are Right Con.
Yeah, well, now I think it's... I think for Brian, I mean, it was known as Conspiracy Con, it was wonderful, but I think Brian, if he takes it again, it should just be Truth Con, just Open Con, because everything is open now, and they're open about it. They're not even afraid. They're in people's faces now, Nick.
Yeah. Or this, or hey, we told you so, Con.
Told you so. There you go. Oh my God. So. Let me give this little talk about Stu Peters' show real quick. If I was married to the table and me and the table or one of us took the vaccine, the bioweapon.
You can do that now, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. And, if my spouse took it, or I took it, and we've been paying, let's say we were married for 25 years or 15 years, and we've been paying on a life insurance policy. A federal judge has come out to say that it is an experimental vaccine, and because your husband died of microcarpia and because they have medical records that he took the vaccine, the insurance companies are no longer going to pay your life insurance policy. Now, understand, let me try to explain this to you. Understand that there's people out there in America who are paying on a life insurance policy. They might even have kids on their policy. I don't know. You know, they have various people you can put in your paying your policy. But when you take the vaccine, they are not going to pay the recipients of that policy because that person took the vaccine. A federal judge has said that it's an experimental vaccine and you willingly took it, that they're not going to pay. There's at least 50% of Americans, let's face it, guys, John and Nick, there's 50% Americans right now that are paying their policies right now that do not have a clue that if you took the vaccine, they're not going to pay. And people are paying on their life insurance policies, and they do not know this. And the thing about this is, if you do have a spouse, let me try to work this out. If you do have a spouse or people, your loved ones, you better just cash it in and take the money, because there's no way, because you can, you know, sometimes they give you 40 cents on the dollar or 50 cents on the dollar. There's no way when you do, if you, especially since you take the vaccine, that when you, if you drop dead or you get microcarpia or you get a brain aneurysm from the graphene, and also there's also Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, real quick, on her website and on her talk this week, she mentioned that there are three different strands of the HIV in the vaccine, so you'll get AIDS. So they said, so the thing about this is you've got tremendous amount of horror stories out there, but you just need to be aware about the insurance policies, because people are paying on their policies every month, and if you did get the vax, you're not going to be able to collect, so you need to try to cash it in and take the money and run.
Well, and remember this, too. Remember what they used to classify as COVID deaths, which was everything. Guy breaks his neck on a motorcycle crash. COVID death. Oh,
right.
Insurance. If he had a life insurance policy, they get to write that one off. Somebody commits suicide. Well, suicide, you're not going to get paid anyway. But you die, of a gunshot wound. Oh, COVID death. They get to write that one off. You are screwed if you buy a life insurance policy anymore, and you are dumb enough to take the death shot.
Yeah.
You're not going to get paid. You're not going to get paid because they're going to label everything as a COVID death, that you took the vaccine, and sorry, you're screwed, you're SOL, and we get to keep your money that you've been paying into for X amount of years.
Right.
But insurance companies are a scam anyway.
I know. Mark played this for me a couple nights ago. I've been talking about this for about 18 months on our show, Nick. People told me I was crazy. I didn't know what I was talking about. Da 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 da. Da. Well, excuse me, it's come full circle. I'm putting it out there because the only reason I'm putting it out there is because there's at least 50% of Americans who have no idea they have taken the vax, but they have no idea they're paying every month on their policy premium. Just in case of an emergency, and it's not going to be worth diddly squat. And the insurance companies are collecting on these policies knowing that they're not going to be paying. But the thing about it is, too, Nick, this is not being talked in mainstream media. I'm putting it out there so that people can tell friends and relatives, hey.
Yeah, don't. If you got the shot, don't get life insurance. It's worthless.
Yeah, and if you do have a policy for 15, 20 years or 10, you got to sit down with your spouse and go get whatever you can on a cents on the dollar, because you're not going to get the zippity-doo-dah in the end. So whatever money you can get out of your policy, you know, that you and the spouse, your loved one, you can at least use it for whatever you guys want to use it for.
Now, here's the funny thing. There are these companies that were out there that used to buy your life insurance policy from you.
Yeah.
They would, you know, you get whatever term you have, they would come in, they would pay you out ahead of time with the understanding that when you die, they collect on your life insurance policy.
Right.
Do they still do that anymore? I haven't seen the advertising for them anymore.
Listen to me, Nick. Listen to me. This is why I'm talking about it on the show for a couple of minutes tonight, is because I know that mainstream media is not. And you know what? A few people who are listening to this, they're going to try to call their insurance agency tonight or tomorrow or Monday morning.
Good.
And say, hey, Mr. So-and-so, by the way, is this true? And they'll be like, they're like, yeah.
Oh, they'll,
like,
try, they'll try to talk. They'll try to talk circles around
right,
anything like that. Well, you really don't want to cancel your insurance policy, because if you die, you won't have anything to back you up for your funeral expenses and blah, de, blah, de, blah. It's like, well, if you guys ain't going to pay out, I don't have anything to back me up to begin with.
Exactly. And a federal judge came forward and said this,
Yeah, and like I said, I looked for that Stu Peters clip earlier today, but I haven't been able to find it.
Yeah, I'll try to. If we get Mark on at 8, I will have him send it. We'll have him send it or play it so that we do. You know, it's only a three. Listen, it's only like a 3 or 4 minute clip that Stu Peters goes into this.
Regardless, I would love to hear this from the judge. I would like to hear that ruling.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable, guys. It's just unbelievable. The other thing that I know that Nick did find was on yesterday, Thursday, the 31st of 2022, the last day of March, on the High Wire, the High Wire report. Amy Bohn, Amy Bohn. She talks about in California. We realize if you don't live in California, it doesn't necessarily concern you, but these people are so evil, they think if they can pass it here, that they'll try to pass it in other states and republics. So we do not want this at all. But this Amy Bohn talked about there's like 10 bills in the California Senate, and they're pretty bad, Nick.
Yeah, I have that. I got that queued up if you want to listen to it before we go into the break.
Okay.
Oh, damn, we still got 20 minutes or so.
Do you want to play it? Because it's pretty it's pretty scary, Larry stuff.
Yeah, this is actually off the High Wire.
Del Bigtree's thing.
Yeah, Del Bigtree.
Yeah,
that's
Del Bigtree.
I was trying to remember his first name so I didn't screw it up. I was going to say Big Del Tree or something or whatever.
Del Taco.
But he goes. I got it queued up where he starts going into what all the bills are and what they do. And I was watching this earlier, and it's just like, you got to be kidding me. Why is anybody believing our government anymore for anything at
ever.
All?
Exactly.
I mean, even if you like bought into the rhetoric, early, you know, to like even like 2 years ago, why would you still believe them now?
I know, they're caught. They're tripping over their wieners, trying to weasel out of stuff. I mean, that's so sick of
it. Yeah, it's beyond stupid.
We're catching them.
Anyway, so
we're catching them all day.
It's on the High Wire. It's episode 261 called California Screaming. So, hey, I didn't make the name, but it's pretty fun.
Tonight, Los Angeles County, where 10 million people live, has declared a public health emergency. Breaking news, stay at home.
Is
that is the
preliminary
order.
Statewide order for people to stay at home.
California, with its 40 million people, becoming the first state in the nation to order a virtual lockdown.
Here in California, they are saying that people could be charged with a misdemeanor if they violate the shelter at home.
If you've observed recurring violations of the safer at home order, please continue to let us know. You know the old expression about snitches. Well, in this case, snitches get rewards. We want to thank you for turning folks in and making sure we are all safe.
The governor made the decision to close beaches after seeing the heavy crowds in some beach communities, especially in Orange County. Aerial video showed packed crowds at Newport and Huntington Beach this weekend.
Good for them.
Just a short time ago, one of the city's most popular hiking trails was shut down.
Being cooped up in the house is, you know, it's not good.
Recently, we've seen the reports of some large parties and gatherings in flagrant violations of health orders. These large parties are unsafe and can cost Angelenos their lives.
Oh, God, what lies?
The city to shut off Los Angeles Department of Water and Power Service in the egregious cases in which houses, businesses, and other venues are hosting unpermitted large gatherings.
Nancy Pelosi is under fire today after surveillance video shows her at a hair salon getting a blowout and not wearing a face mask. The most powerful woman in America can be seen with wet hair inside a salon in San Francisco. Problem is, under California COVID-19 regulations, clients cannot be serviced indoors.
As it turns out, it was a setup, so I take responsibility for falling for a setup.
This morning, Californians waking up to a new reality, bracing for a statewide lockdown affecting 33 million residents after infections soared past 20,000 a day. Tonight, Governor Gavin says he's stopping indoor dining in restaurants and closing all bars, wineries, and movie theaters statewide.
In Los Angeles alone, an estimated 15,000 were forced to close during the pandemic.
I'm losing everything. Everything I own is being taken away from me. They have not given us money, and they have shut us down. We cannot survive. My staff cannot survive. Mayor Garcetti and Gavin Newsom is responsible for every single person that doesn't have unemployment, that does not have a job, and all the businesses that are going under.
For those who blame you, what do you say to them?
I take responsibility for trying to save as many lives as we possibly could.
Oh, God.
The nation with a stay-at-home order. We think that's safe lives.
As the LAPD says, it's ever more violence have been complicated by the pandemic. Continued rise of murders and shootings in L.A. is causing community concerns, and it has families living in fear. Homeless camps, affluent L.A. sidewalks.
We have a very serious homeless crisis in San Francisco.
As tents move in, there's a clear exodus of residents moving out. If you're not shocked by what you see, then I don't know what you would be shocked by.
Moments ago, the governor of California announcing a COVID-19 vaccine will be added to the state's current list of immunizations required to attend school. This is a first in the country.
Proof of COVID-19 vaccination will be required at bars, nightclubs, and more in Los Angeles County.
A new bill that could mandate all California businesses require employees and independent contractors to be vaccinated against COVID-19.
Dr. Richard Pan says this.
By the way, how did all that work out?
Oh, God, it's been a nightmare.
Wow.
Oh, God. People left the state, I mean, in droves. And there's something else I want to talk about. I want to finish with this before I go on to that one. But, yeah, Nick, unbelievable.
And this is just the preliminaries, the buildup to the bills that they came out with. So
that's correct.
Yeah. Then this is all news stuff.
Having a safe workplace is essential.
Yeah, this is all news broadcast. So
yeah.
So right now,
the business is going.
The lawmakers are considering a bill that would allow children 12 and older to get the coronavirus vaccine without their parents' permission.
The new bill would require 12 students to get vaccinated against COVID. To think that our legislature would pass a bill and put it into law that our littlest children from K all the way up through 12 have to submit to what is essentially an experimental medical procedure. There's no liability here for anyone.
A lot of us can't afford to quit work to homeschool our kids. It's not fair that we don't have a choice.
This needs to end right here, right now, today.
This is worse than the Nazis.
We cannot be living in a hole any longer.
Everyone's on the brink of just, like, complete, like, financial devastation at this point.
Everyone's going under.
You need to step up and do the right thing.
Do not make Orange County into the People's Republic of China or Nazi Germany.
As California goes, so goes the nation.
Yeah, that
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Before you say, oh, my God, thank God I don't live in California, I want to think about the final line by Gavin Newsom, because I believe it's prophetic. As California goes, so goes the nation. Our conversations today are going to be, what do they want for this nation, and how do we see that through what's happening in California? I want you to take this very seriously, because what we are seeing in California and what we talk about today, you must realize, is what is happening inside of every governor's office, inside of every Senate office, congressional office. The largest, most powerful lobby in Washington is pharma, and we are seeing what they want for this nation take place in California. To give you a sense of it, 10 bad bills were released just over the last couple of weeks. There's this great brochure put out by PERC, which is Protection of the Educational Rights of Kids. Let's go through the list of these 10 bad bills, shall we? Here they are. SB 871 requires all children 0 to 17 to get the COVID-19 vaccine. SB 866 lowers the age of consent to age 12. SB 920 authorizes the medical board to inspect a doctor's office and records without patient's consent, violating HIPAA laws. SB 1464 forces law enforcement officials to enforce public health orders even if they oppose them. SB 1479 requires schools to continue COVID testing. SB 1390 censors any social media platform that posts dissenting information that contradicts the government narrative. SB 1184 changes the California Medical Privacy Act to authorize a healthcare provider or service plan to disclose your child's medical information to a school-linked services coordinator without parental consent. AB 1797 makes changes to the California Immunization Record Database for government agencies to have access to all vaccine records in addition to just students. AB 1993 requires all employees, including independent contractors, to show proof of COVID-19 vaccination. And AB 2098 classifies the sharing of COVID-19 medical opinion by doctors and surgeons, contrary to the CDC narrative, as misinformation and as unprofessional conduct that would result in disciplinary action, a total military takeover of the state based on your health records that were once yours, the decisions for your body and your children that were once yours, all on the chopping block. Well, that great letter or brochure that was put out by PERC, PERC is doing such amazing work. We've had the leader, Amy Bond, on before. But for those of you that missed that episode, here is one of the greatest gifts to California, Amy Bond. Take a look at this.
And joining us now is Amy Bond, the president of PERC.
Give it up for Amy Bond. Is that not an incredible woman?
We're willing to put everything on the line to fight to protect not only our children, but all of the children in California.
So we are going to defeat those vaccine passports. We are going to take back our country. We are going to fight with everything we've got. We came out swinging with a lot of punches. We filed 6 lawsuits in California.
They were planning to ban and kick out over 35,000 children at the beginning of January if they didn't have a COVID shot. LAUSD lawsuit really held the line on that, and they ended up delaying and suspending that mandate until the fall.
I ask you to stand with us and do whatever it takes to stand with your first responders, with your city employees, with your heroes. If you ever feel alone and wonder if you can do this, know that you are not alone. You are a part of a global movement that is not going to stop.
You know, this issue is broader and bigger than just any one group that we kind of like to separate ourselves into. It's about freedom and liberty.
We shall defend our land, our children, our lives. We shall never, ever surrender.
Well, Amy Bond and PERC, probably one of the only nonprofits giving us a run for our money on the amount of lawsuit wins taking place in the United States of America. It's my honor to be joined by Amy now. Amy, welcome to the High Wire once again.
Good to be here.
It's great. It's really great to have you. So first, you know, I was looking at this list. It's incredible. Just when really we all thought it's safe to go home, we can get back to business as usual, clearly they're trying to lock down California forever. Now, when we first talked about having you on, this was, you know, the 10 bad bills was this leaflet that you put out with PERC, but it's not 10 anymore. Can you tell me where we're at right now and why that number has changed?
Right. Okay. So right now, these are the most extreme bills that we've seen across the entire country.
Okay.
And the and having 10, that's a lot all in one time.
Yeah.
So to start with, we have one that we think we've killed. Now,
okay.
It can come back, but it's the one that was going to require the COVID shot on all employees and contract workers across the entire state.
Okay.
So that was going to be a mandate. And that one's AB 1993.
Okay, AB 1993. Let me strike that one off for the moment. Not permanently. We should be careful.
Right.
But so how does that happen? What happens? I saw that it was defeated, but I had been talking to you. I saw the headlines were defeated. It's not defeated. We can't trust that language.
Right. So what's happened so far is that the bill author has put a hold on the bill. So
okay.
It's on pause. The co-author of the bill has removed her endorsement of the bill and her name off the bill as well.
Okay.
We have two public statements, one from the author and the co-author, that this bill is on hold, on pause, and it doesn't look like it's going to be moving forward. However, we do know some of the legislative tricks, so it could come back. That
okay.
bill could come back between now and the end of session in the form of...
And when is the end of session? Just to think about
that. We're looking at... Okay, so you've got September, so you've got the legislative season, essentially, but we're watching this one especially till about May.
Okay.
So
okay.
watching it till just before the summertime. But if it comes back, they could try to bring it back in a basically a cleanup bill, which is a trailer bill. And that, if they do that, the whole purpose of that is to remove the public from knowing what's going on. It doesn't have to go to committees if it comes back through a trailer bill. And it's something that they do to not be as transparent. So it's to kind of go through some loopholes to try to get around. So right now, I mean, we're really confident that we've got it, but we still have to be vigilant just in case they try to bring it back. So now the reason why we are victorious with this is because all of the California organizations, the freedom groups, you know, firefighters, you name it, everybody has been unified to defeat these bills.
Right.
So it's been a tremendous effort with more than 80-plus opposition letters that were submitted to the committee on this particular bill. And that's part of how I think we've won and are defeating that particular bill. So we still have to put the pressure on, be ready in case it comes back. It's not done until it's done.
But it's a sign, truly, that the confidence around some of these laws is not what they had hoped, right? And so is that one of the things you do? Do you go after co-authors of these bills and start, sort of saying, you're going to be in trouble. If you want to get elected again, we are going to go out. We're going to put your name everywhere. Do you start really letting them know, don't stand with this bill any longer?
Oh, absolutely. One of the reasons why the co-author on this bill removed her name is because her local constituents put so much pressure on her that it was enough for her to step back.
Okay.
And I think that because they're going so far and it's so extreme with this whole packet of bills, this whole set of bills,
right,
that some of these legislators they don't want the stigma. They don't want to be labeled as extreme and putting forward, you know, basically the worst bills that we've seen thus far in the entire country.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a failed vaccine does not work. Over the fifth boosters, I'll talk to Jeffrey Jackson about that later. The idea that you could not work, not be employed, not have employees run a business in California without that vaccine just seems absolutely, just this side of completely stupid. So any other bills that are knocked off yet or any that are wavering?
So I would say the next bill that, again, we have to keep the pressure on.
Yep.
So nothing's done until it's done and defeated. But SB 871, we've got a couple of things with that. As of right now.
So this is the one that requires children 0-17 to get the COVID vaccine. So this would basically be your average vaccine education bill.
Right. And it does a little more than just that, too. It removes the personal belief exemption. So basically there are no exemptions for children. And it's at the age of, zero, basically 6-month-old and above would be required to, have the COVID shot. So
now, is this the one, because you said personal belief exemption, and those of us that fled California, we fought SB 277, the personal belief exemption was what was removed. So why is this back again? Why is this personal belief exemption language in this bill?
Well, because during SB 277, the bill during 2015, the author, he looks at it as a loophole, which is ironic that the author of the very bill says it's a loophole, that there's a personal belief exemption for any additional vaccines that are out.
We're talking about Senator Richard Pan, who brought SB 277.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So they see it as a loophole that I don't think they realized it was there, perhaps. And then all of the freedom groups said, oh, guess what? We can have an exemption if you try to require.
Well, my understanding when we were there is that was one of the things that we're fighting for. You know, so many groups, it's hard to name them all. I don't want to even start because I'll miss somebody. But all these groups, when we're pushing on SB 277, I believe that was one of the concessions. Like, if you're going to pass this, then at least you have to have, you know, the personal belief exemption for all new vaccines. That, you know, you're saying that the current list of vaccines is safe, but we don't want to be subject to new ones. And so that was the concession was, okay, any new vaccines. Well, now COVID comes along, and now they are stuck with this, you know, this piece of legislation that says any new vaccine has to have a personal belief exemption. Here's where they're trying to race it right out of the gate.
Right. And they're trying to make it so that they don't have to go through the legislative process anymore. So any vaccine in addition to now, they're trying to make it so that the California Department of Public Health can add any more.
Wow.
Any more doses, any additional vaccines. They also, it looks to us, as we've analyzed the bill, they're trying to get around the EUA status for children as well.
Wow.
And they put these little clauses in the bill. So they make it, you know, this little phrase that they can follow the guidance of the CDC and ACIP and, you know, these agencies. So they're trying to get around the EUA. We know that. And remove all exemptions, basically requiring it for zero and above.
So basically, they want to continue this world we're living in where Tony Fauci's and health department officials we've never elected make the decisions on whether we can have an education, whether we can go out and have a job, whether we can walk and drive down the street, something that I think needs to be ended immediately. I think we all just saw the danger of giving health departments the level of power they've had through this. We can't unseat these people. We didn't vote them into office, and they seem to have more power than our governor, more power than the president of the United States, and here they want to cede even more power so there's no legislative process. So that's a really bad one, SB 871. Right. But you're saying obviously there's some political pushback,
right.
I think. In
I'm going to have an issue with this one because we've been talking about this on Granada Forum and the Natural Healthy Connection show for years about how many vaccines kids get.
Right.
And your compromise if I understood what he said correctly, the compromise was, okay, we'll concede that these vaccines are safe. The 85 vaccines that kids are getting before they're 6 years old are safe.
Yeah.
And yet, the autism rate is going through the damn roof.
Right. Guys, we're at the break. We'll be right back with John Graff, myself, Nick Pearson, Mr. Wonderful, myself, and probably Mark and our guests. Don't go anywhere. We got more havoc for you, and we'll be right back. This is Granada Forum Radio Program, and this is Revolution Radio. Hold on.
Thanks. Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio, Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Riffs, I think. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for free association. when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, welcome back to the Granada Forum Radio program, ladies and gentlemen. This is Revolution Radio. By the way, we'll be joined by, hopefully, Mark Gonzalez and our guy that was supposed to be on last week, but we had we want to thank, by the way, Sean David Morton and Carrie Cassidy. Go to her website, projectcamelot.org, .com. And Sean's got a website. It's not quite up yet, but we're going to bring Sean back in, Carrie, but we're bringing them back in. But I rescheduled John for this week. John is the school world order, so we're going to get him on. So it's going to be good for about an hour. And saw some fun there. We're trying to put as much information, guys, as we can out there, because things are going. We can't keep up with all the information that is coming out on a daily basis from a lot of different wonderful people: Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Jean Ruby, the High Wire, Del Bigtree. So we're just trying to put. Dr. Bill Deagle, we're just trying to put out as much information as we can so that people are informed, because we don't believe people are informed.
No, they don't seem to be. The mainstream news is not doing it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. You can believe them.
Sure.
They tell you that you can believe them, so you should believe them. And if we anyway, we got Mark on, so.
Okay,
oh, by the way, that was April Fool's. So.
Okay.
Well, good one. That's funny.
Okay, okay. Is Mark's not on yet? No.
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay, Mark, I know we're trying to get John on, our guest that we
calling
booked up
right
last
now.
Week because of the passing of Jordan. And by the way, if you'd like to go to Jordan and Maxwell's website and maybe just donate something, you can go to jordanmaxwellshow.com. That's the jordanmaxwellshow.com and check out his website there. Hey, guys.
When we
Hello?
Got John on.
We have John on, too. John, welcome to our program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lindy. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm sorry we bumped you last week in the death of Jordan and it's the passing of Jordan. And it's just been crazy the last 10 days or so. I don't know what to tell you. I apologize for that. But I'm so glad that you're on. Listen, John, is it possible that we could play a three-minute clip and then give you the rest of the time?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I want to play this clip. I know that Mark has it. Mark, can you cue the clip from Stu Peters?
Well, this one's a little bit longer. Which clip were you?
It's a three-minute clip about the judge who said it's an experimental vaccine.
Let me see here. I don't think that was on Stu Peters.
Okay, I got that one wrong then.
Right. Let's see. But I do.
Well, I guess that's why I couldn't find it.
Oh God, I'm gonna get my tail kicked for that one. Hold on.
Oh, don't get your tail. I do have the one from Zelenko, but it'll probably go 5 minutes.
No, well, you don't have the one. You can't find the one. I thought it was Stu Peters because I wrote it down. It's a Wednesday episode 3:30:22.
Okay. Just give me a minute. I'll look at it, but I have I'll save this. I got a story.
Okay, well, I will play some Zico next week, both on the health show and the regular show next week, I promise, on that one.
Right, okay.
So I got to give John some time. He's going to have throat fastballs at us. Hey, John, can you give out your website real quick?
Yeah, the website is schoolworldorder.info.
So that's good.
Can you say that a couple of times?
Schoolworldorder.info, and that's actually the title of the book as well, School World Order, The Technocratic Globalization of Corporatized Education is the full title, and so the website is schoolworldorder.info.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
I'm going.
Well, run
right
us
there.
Through it. What is – tell? Give us the skinny.
Give us a rundown.
And give us a skinny on it.
Okay, so the book or the website, or you want me to just go over both? So the website.
Well, yeah, so let us know what it's about. I mean,
yeah.
What?
So the book is just, it can basically be broken up into two main sections and then a third part that sort of goes along with it. So the first part has to do with the corporatization or privatization of education, and that has to do with basically the school choice movement. Through charter schools, so they're public-private partnerships. You have private corporations, private edu-corporations that are posed as schools that are publicly funded, subsidized with public tax dollars. Then you also have the workforce training component into that. And then the third part is basically the removal of elected school boards by means of the corporate boards, which basically when you have a charter school, you don't have an elected school board. You have a corporate board that's appointed. And then the second component of the book has to do with technology, ed tech, and how the ed tech is going to facilitate the changing of academics into workforce training through the public-private partnerships. And in particular, you could break down the ed tech part into three components, which all incorporate a data mining at some level. And so the three main types of technologies that I cover have to do with what's called the adaptive learning software, which is the modern digital version of the Skinner box, which is based on B.S. Skinner's operant conditioning. So they're basically psychological conditioning algorithms. So that's the cognitive behavioral conditioning. Then you have the socio-emotional learning technologies, which are basically wearables that use biofeedback through like EEGs, heart rates, galvanic skin response to basically measure the students' emotions. And then the third part, which is something that's not really integrated quite yet, it would be the precision education, and that has to do with basically personalizing both of those adaptive learning software as well as the socio-emotional learning technologies based on the student's DNA. So precision education is a play on precision medicine, which is basically the personalized medicine by personalizing it based on your genetic code, your particular DNA sequences. From there, I go into transhumanism, so basically the use of brain-computer interfaces to sort of integrate the artificial intelligence directly into the human body. And so that covers basically all of the technology. So I sort of start, you know, with stuff that's readily understandable, and I sort of move more and more into the future. The third broader component that ties into both of these has to do with the role of the Order of Skull and Bones historically in setting up the university system, compulsory education, also their impact on basically the development of behavioral psychology, in particular education psychology, and, you know, basically all that stuff I talked about with the adaptive learning software. It can be traced back to the Order of Skull and Bones. And then also their influence on the development of brain-computer interfaces and their impact on the financing of artificial intelligence as well. So that's sort of a broad overview of all the topics that are covered in the book.
Well, let's try to start this out a little more simple than that. Let's talk about K-12 education, where it's at and where they want it to go. Because we already know education is a joke at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So what have they integrated into K-12 education at this point? That, because kids are coming out of school and they don't know a damn thing about anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the whole behavioral psychological method, you know, it predates all the ed tech stuff. So, you know, you can go back to, you know, simple stuff just like the compartmentalization of subjects that are separated by the whole, you know, you ring the bell and then one class starts and you shut off your language arts side of your brain and then you move into your quantitative mathematical side. And, you know, that bell is basically an adaptation of, you know, the whole Pavlovian algorithm that was used, Pavlov's dog. So, you know, associating particular stimuli with the bell. So when the bell rings, you know, you basically learn to basically shut off one part of your brain and turn on another one. And then you also had the idea of rewards and punishments with, you know, gold stars and detentions and things like that. You know, so K through 12, you know, not so much, I guess, would be preparing the students for the workforce just quite yet. Largely what you're trying to do is train the students to be obedient to learning stimuli. So, you know, educational psychology, whether you're talking about.
I don't think I got the punishment part of that down real good because I kept doing it over and over again.
Well, yeah, I spent a lot of time in detention in the principal's office as well. That might be why I ended up writing the book that I wrote. I guess the conditioning didn't really work that well on me either. You know, and that's, you know, I guess part of what illustrates, you know, the what's wrong with the system as well, because, you know, learning should be done for its own purposes, you know, not for the sake of an external reward. And there's, you know, even scholars like Alfie Cohn, who's got a book called Punished by Rewards, which is basically a, you know, a diatribe against the entire educational psychology agenda. You know, he moves into some things that I don't necessarily agree with. You know, he actually would like to do the no grades and things like that. But it's a good book if you just want to, you know, get a nice critique of using, you know, external rewards and punishments to condition a child to be obedient rather than to teach them to think rather than what to think.
Right. Let me think. See if I understand this on a different level. The education system is not about education at all. It has nothing to I mean, it does. I mean, it does to a certain extent, you know, math, reading what it's supposed to be, that we what, that we see it from our point of view. But the whole education system is more – it almost sounds like it's like a training, that you're training people to follow a certain set of guidelines that they don't even realize that they're being indoctrinated into.
Yeah, definitely. So am I getting feedback or was somebody trying to talk?
No, you're good.
No, you're good.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, T.H. Bell, so I should mention that my book is also heavily based on the work of Charlotte Thompson Iserby, who was my one of my very good friends and
right.
mentors, and she just passed away last month, you know, just to sort of show her some respect here. But, you know, when she was in the Department of Education and leaked Project BEST, Better or Basic Education Skills Through Technology, which was basically the big program for all the ed tech stuff that I've been talking about. The Secretary of Education that was at the head of the department, his name was T.H. Bell, and he wrote a book called, I think it's Performance, Accountability, and Education. But the whole idea is about performance-based education, right? So it's not about conceptual knowledge. It's not about conceptual learning of grammar, logic, and rhetoric in the sense of the classical arts and the seven classical liberal arts, the trivium and the quadrivium. It's basically about what the student can do, and what the student can do, what's important in terms of what they call learning outcomes, has to do with, are you obedient? And some of that has to do with politically correct values clarification, but a lot of it, you know, it ties in with workforce training, because the idea here is to, you know, develop nice little worker bees that'll, you know, be nice cogs in the machine. And so, you know, where the state and corporate sectors merge, you want to basically indoctrinate the students to basically be obedient so that the economy will flow smoothly. And so that's training, and it's not education. Yeah.
Right. So all that stuff we're seeing now with the CRT and all that, that's just the next step. In the obedience, it's like if they're not sending people to be educated. They're sending them to, like, obedience school for dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some of that actually can, you know, crawls out of what was once called values clarification, and Charlotte wrote a lot about it. And, you know, where it sort of diverges from the classical method is that, you know, in the classical sense, you're trying to understand objective truth, right? And from you know, universal morality, and what the CRT stuff does, critical theory, right? Not just critical race theory, but critical theory is basically what sometimes is called cultural Marxism. So it goes back to Horkheimer, Adorno, and Marcuse. And basically what Marx, his idea was the idea of dialectical materialism. And so basically a dialect is basically a conflict between two opposing forces. And for him, it was the dialect of class forces. So you had your bourgeois capitalist and your proletariat working class. And they thought that through basically class warfare, you could, you know, merge the state and corporate sectors to have sort of a communist, you know, utopia. That didn't actually work out so well. So cultural Marxism basically plays dialectics with different cultural identities. So different ethnic identities, different gender identities. And basically what you have is no longer are you trying to understand an objective truth that can be applied equally to everybody regardless of their identity politics. But instead what you have is basically cultural warfare. And the result in either situation sort of boils down to the same scenario. So in the class war, the idea was that the state would have to play referee and sort of redistribute wealth by merging, you know, with the corporate sector. But in the cultural dialectic, basically there'll be a redistribution of wealth through something called racial equity. And the way that they'll use that is going to be through something called social credit. So your ESG corporate scores, that's environmental, social, governance. And, you know, I should have mentioned in, when I gave the preface of the book that all this data mining from the adaptive learning software, the social emotional learning software, the precision ed stuff, all that data is going to be used to sort of give you, a psychological profile that's going to give you a social credit score like we see in China, where basically you're going to be permitted or restricted access to the public square or private services based on, you know, how you perform on these different modules. But in terms of the whole political correctness stuff, you know, it's basically going to be, are you woke enough? All right. And so, you know, that's the opposite of having some sort of an objective truth that you can understand with grammar, logic, and rhetoric through the application of the golden rule, using a universal morality that's the basis of our Bill of Rights, where your human dignity is in the image of God rather than in the subjective position of your cultural identity. So I do want to, you know, note something as far as that goes, though, because I think it's important to be careful with how we respond to the CRT thing. Because, you know, I think it's if you just watch mainstream media, there's two things that they play all the time. One is the CRT stuff. The other is the transgender stuff. The third one was COVID. Now it's the war. And the other two, you know, it basically puts people in camps. So I don't think, you know, a lot of times people want to respond to CRT as like it's anti-white racism. And, you know, that's in there. But it's actually racist against everybody in the sense that, you know, everybody is being treated based on their, you know, the cultural ethnic identity. So, you know, in rebutting CRT, I think it's important to, you know, understand that, you know, I wouldn't call it systemic racism, but, you know, there are some, you know, racist problems we've had in the country. And it's good to start, you know, by building a bridge rather than, you know, creating that divide, because otherwise what happens is, you know, everybody just digs their heels into their camps. And then if we can't communicate with each other, people are basically acting on emotion. And then that just gives more of a reason to implement social credit and have the state play referee.
Right. Well, what that sounds like to me is that they shifted gears on the dictatorship of the proletariat. Instead of making it class warfare, they made it race warfare. So they're still their goals and their aims are still exactly the same. They're just their tactics just changed.
Yeah, and you know, I should note, you know, so this can be a part where we sort of bring in the order of skull and bones, and that is that, you know, Marx's dialectical materialism was based on Hegel's dialectic, and Hegel, his was a dialectic of ideas. So he had this concept of thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So you have like a dominant idea, and then that meets an opposing idea. And then through the conflict of ideas, you would then have a synthesis. And then through that synthesis, you would have a change in the society. And, you know, this is a guy who's effectively a pantheist, meaning he saw, you know, the God was not a transcendent force as much as it was basically, you know, in everything. And so he also said that the state is God marching on earth. So with all these, you know, whether it's, you know, the cultural Marxism or, you know, class Marxism, what they both have in common is dialectics, right? And, you know, that was Hegelianism was brought over here largely with the help of the order of skull and bone. So some of the first most prominent pedagogues or education theorists in the United States, they implemented a combination of Wundtian psychology, the stimulus response stuff, but it was wrapped in a Hegelian philosophy of dialectical collectivism. So Wilhelm Wundt was the first guy to ever have a psychology laboratory out there in Leipzig, Germany. And basically, the order of skull and bones, it was three people in particular. So you had Daniel Quake Gilman, Andrew Dixon White, and Timothy Dwight. With their help, it was imported over to here. And these guys promoted people like G. Stanley Hall, who was the first PhD of Wilhelm Wundt. And he was a Hegelian. And so were these other three guys. And so G. Stanley Hall becomes the first professor of psychology in the United States. He's the first person to have a department of psychology. And it's John Dewey who studies under G. Stanley Hall. And so both of these guys are both Hegelians, and they're both in the behavioral psychology tradition. And so, you know, this idea of dialectics is, you know, been integrated with the education system basically since the beginning of modern educational psychology, And it's just sort of changed in different iterations, you know, as it gets passed down the line. From John Dewey, you get a guy called John B. Watson. He's the guy that comes up with, studied under Dewey. He comes up with the concept of behaviorism, which is just a different spin on Wundt's stimulus response psychology. And then after John B. Watson, you get guys like E.L. Thorndike at Columbia University. He also studied under a guy, James McKean Cattell, who also studied under Wundt. And he also was a fan of Galton as well, by the way. And so that's, you know, Francis Galton being the founding father of eugenics. So he wanted to tie eugenics in with the Wundtian stimulus response psychology. And then from E.L. Thorndike, you get from his puzzle box experiments, it was B.F. Skinner that sort of took that idea and came up with the Skinner box experiments. And from the Skinner box experiment, these are experiments with animals, you know, like the rat and the maze, and you're just trying to condition the rat to perform a particular behavior based on, again, rewards and punishments. And Skinner took that and he put it into what he called his teaching machines and through some called programmed instruction. And if you look at the history, this is mainstream academic history, you know, the modern adaptive learning software is just a digital version of the analog teaching machines that B.F. Skinner built in the late 50s and 60s. So basically, you know, what he did was he put the learning stimuli on a reel of tape or through a punch card, an IBM punch card. And so the stimuli is, you know, question or matching or multiple choice. Your response is, you know, how effectively or efficiently you either describe the answer or help poke out the holes on the IBM punch card. Based on how well you perform and how quickly you can do it, you're either going to be remediated, make you do it again, or it's going to give you, like, you know, an honors route. And, you know, instead of gears and wheels on a roll of tape, basically you just turn that into digital windows, clicks on a mouse, add some videos, you know, make it a little more multimedia, perhaps a little more interactive. Maybe you can make the algorithms a little more sophisticated, and, you know, maybe add some video games in there, but it's essentially the exact same thing, right? So and then of course with the gamification, you know, you're integrating more of the whole reward cycle, the positive reinforcement, because, you know, I mean, I never thought the learning video games were very fun in school, but I mean, maybe now graphics are a little more sophisticated that you know, you can the idea is they can trick the children into enjoy being conditioned. You know, so again, yeah.
Go ahead. Say, how far back does this go? I mean, even before it became mechanized and became into the digital realm like what we have now, how far back does this actually go as far as education is concerned? I mean, it's got to go back further than the 1800s.
Well, if you're talking about
1700s?
Well, so, you know, yeah, it's interesting. If you're talking about you know, modern behavioral psychology, you know, again, the first laboratory would have been Wundt's laboratory in Leipzig, and that's going to be late 1800s. But if you read B.F. Skinner's, his technology of teaching, he actually traces some of the theories he uses back to somebody named Johann Pestalozzi. And Johann Pestalozzi was actually in the Bavarian Illuminati, right? So you're talking late 1700s there. And right. Another interesting connection with that is that, you know, that Wundt's, either his father or his grandfather was Karl Kirchenrat Wundt, and he was also in the Bavarian Illuminati. And as Anthony Sutton, who wrote the Introduction to the Order of Skull and Bones, America's Secret Establishment, and published by Trying Day, who also published my book, and a lot of my Skull and Bones research is based on Sutton's research, although Charlotte did give me the address books is one of the things that I inherited from her, so I actually have the physical copies of those. But, you know, Sutton basically – so the Order of Skull and Bones is a German secret society, and one of the ways you can interpret the number 322 is basically it's the second or third branch of an earlier period that came out of Germany. And if you look at the dates, around the time that the Order of Skull and Bones would have popped up. Now, it was incorporated, I want to say, about 1830-ish or something like that. And so the Illuminati was banned in the late 1780s or something like that. If you also look at when the College of William and Mary was set up, then that was basically it was banned. So all the fraternities, people were sort of, there was a big anti-Masonic movement during that time. And so, you know, the fraternities were started to get banned in the colleges. And one of those would have, was a fraternity at the College of William and Mary. And that would have been, you know, in between 1780 and 1830. And then shortly thereafter, Yale's Order of Skull and Bones popped up. And so, Sutton suggests that it's possible that there is a direct link. Perhaps the Order of Skull and Bones is a lodge that had its origins in the Bavarian Illuminati as well.
Okay, so they didn't figure within education that behavioral modification was something that they could have done. I mean, earlier than that. I mean, this, you know, because nothing that happens all at one time. There's a process that goes where people have a learning curve. So, I mean, this is what I'm trying to figure out. When did this kind of knowledge, this kind of thing start? I mean, or did it?
Well,
it just didn't pop up all at one time. I can't imagine.
Sure. No. I mean, you know, so psychology itself is, you know, was a sub-discipline of philosophy. Like, it wasn't, you know, a scientific discipline. So when I say the first laboratory psychology, I mean the point at which it breaks off from being a sub-discipline in philosophy and becomes basically an academic science. But, you know, if you want to talk about the use of, you know, so where all this technology, where the behavioral algorithms, all this psychological conditioning meets with the different high-tech algorithms, the artificial intelligence, the data mining, we're talking something like cybernetics, okay? And so, you know, you had the first cybernetics conferences in, was it the late 40s, early 50s, Macy's cybernetics conferences. You had people like Norbert Wiener. You had John von Neumann. Alan Turing was connected to some of those guys, although he wasn't at the actual conferences. You know, then you have Gregory Bateson, eugenicist, who was there, his wife Margaret Mead as well. But basically what they were looking at, so they had a team of mathematicians, computer scientists, psychologists, anthropologists. So they're basically looking at, you know, how to basically build the social credit system, how to tie all these different disciplines together, integrate it with artificial intelligence, build technologies that could basically engineer people socially, and not just on an individual scale, but like collectively. So for the purpose of statecraft, you know, there's a Norbert Wiener has a book that's called The Human Use of Human Beings. But the term cybernetics, you know, that's an ancient Greek term, cybernetes. Okay. And, you know, you're talking BC. So, you know, I guess you could go all the way back to, you know, some of the, you know.
I imagine it could go back pretty far. but now here comes a relevant question just for today, because our education system, and you got the book School World Order, with today's education system really didn't kick into high gear until they put in the Department of Education. Now, given what you know, at what point did they decide that was the point to put that department in the United States? You know, anybody else around the world who's listening to this can figure out from their own country. But when they decided to put that in, there had to be a reason why it happened at that time. Was it that they had just reached that point where it needed to be implemented so that they could start doing all this other behavioral modification or whatever? I mean, I'm trying to get a grasp on this.
Yeah, so, you know, prior to there being a Department of Education, there was a Department of Health, Education, and Wealth, right? And so when they took that, and it had three separate offices. The labor, education, and your health and human services. So they when they broke up the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, it actually became two separate departments. So that from that was spawned the Department of Education, but also the Department of Health and Human Services. So, you know, they had a very large bureaucracy for, you know, educational conditioning. And, you know, if you look at projects like there's I have a Charlotte, one of her files that she gave me. It's called Teaching Machines and Programmed Instruction. And you can get it on my database on my website. And this was a partnership. This is 1960. Okay, this is a partnership that involves IBM, the Air Force, the Department of the Navy, the National Education Association. So, you know, the union itself, and then it had a bunch of behavioral psychologists involved in it. So you had Robert Glaser. He's a guy that got the James McKean Cattell Award and also the E.L. Thorndike Award. So he got awards based on those two folks that I told you were these rock stars in the history of behavioral psychology. He had a guy, A.A. Lumsdaine. He was in basically psychological operations in the military. And then also added to that was, you know, it was basically a body of literature based on Skinner. And then his predecessor, Sidney L. Pressey, okay? And so, you know, you had a large government bureaucracy that was always involved in this. I mean, by creating the Department of Education, basically what you're doing is you're allocating more resources and a larger bureaucracy to that specific what would have been a separate office. Now, to your question about the timing of that, so one of the things that I – dug up from Charlotte's archives was a document called UNESCO Study 11. And UNESCO Study 11, from what I've gathered, not just based on the Study 11 documents that I have, but also based on Project BEST, that was that document that Charlotte leaked. That's what got her fired from the Department of Ed. So that was, you know, it's called Basic Education Skills for Technology. And it was tied in with the public-private partnerships in school choice. So it was the switching of academics to workforce training through the Skinner-Bott psychological conditioning through public-private partnerships with computer technology corporations. But both of these things are going on at the same time. So basically, our Project BEST was the domestic version of this UNESCO Study 11, which was titled New Technologies in Education. And in this project, what they were doing, it was a partnership between not just Western capitalist nations, but also some of the Eastern Bloc Soviet nations. And in a previous UNESCO document, late 70s, which was a preface to this, it basically said that they liked the idea of the centralized statecraft from the communist bloc as the most efficient means of implementing education technology, because you could standardize it and centralize it. But the problem was that, you know, and this is where Study 11 comes in, is that if you want to make a global system, you know, you need to be able to cross those various national boundaries. And so that was where the multinational technology corporations were involved in this partnership. So you had Apple, IBM, and Microsoft in particular. And you had a bunch of other smaller startups that, you know, created, you know, various ed tech platforms like Plato and BASIC and you know, all the earlier programming and software codes and things like that. But so basically what Study 11 did, and with Project BEST being basically the pilot here, was they were using the multinational technology corporations to basically facilitate and standardize the ed tech across the national boundaries. But eventually, as we're seeing basically now, as we go into this lockdown and we're looking at importing the social credit system from, you know, the communist China, was that, you know, now that basically the global IT infrastructure is set up through these public-private partnerships, through these commercial exchanges, globalism and all that, you know, now that we have these networks set up, now is the time to sort of roll out more of the centralized statecraft that was perfected in some of the Eastern Bloc communist nations. So, you know, if you look at it, and they even talked about in some of those documents, you know, talked about, they didn't call it the fourth industrial revolution, but they did talk about, you know, the information revolution. And, you know, there's a document in there by John Naisbitt, and he's the guy that wrote Megap Trends, and he wrote this article for the American Bar Association where he was talking about basically also how you would coordinate the various legal structures in various localities to sort of go along with or to sort of comply with and streamline these exchanges and sort of to convert it. So, I mean, you know, looking forward, I would, you know, it looks to me as if Study 11 was setting the stage for what we have now, just sort of putting everything in place for a time when, you know, a certain event might enable us to sort of centralize all that infrastructure.
So do you think that all those Eastern Bloc European countries were, and the Soviet Union and all that, you think those were kind of like just like test runs to see what would work and what wouldn't work?
You know, I think that's, I really, you know, if you look at it, so one of the things with the Order of Skull and Bones and Anthony Sutton documents as well, you know, they were always funding both sides of various, you know, geopolitical conflicts, and in particular right. in World War II, right? So, you know, the Order of Skull and Bones was funding the Soviet Union. They were also funding, you know, the Hitler's Nazi regime, right? And so, I definitely think that's at least one angle that was being played there. I mean, obviously, some of it's just profits, and sort of, you know, by creating the conflict again, then you can create a merger. But go ahead. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, what I meant was to say was were they testing the ground to see how long, you know, what they had to do and find out what worked, what failed, and all that till they could bring this to a global scale.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's what I would surmise, you know, based on, you know, just looking at, you know, those examples. You know, you can basically beta test, you know, what types of authoritarian structures work, right? Should it be more of a sort of a fascist flavor? Should it be more of, you know, where the corporations have a little more hand on the steering wheel? Should it be more of a, you know, a communist Eastern Bloc structure where the state has a little more hands on the steering wheel, you know, and by playing both sides, you know, when things sort of collapse or get to a certain point, you know, you can just sort of move your assets elsewhere.
And now that comes in again, given the name of your book, School or Order, that's where I think the education part of it comes in, because you've got to, again, it goes back even to like George Orwell's 1984. You got to indoctrinate them when they're young. Without the parents being involved in it, and we're seeing a lot of that now.
Yeah, and I should just mention as well, you know, one of the things that Charlotte, you know, talked a lot about, and I don't remember if this agreement, I think this was after they released her from the department, but you know, there was education agreements between Reagan and Gorbachev, right? And so, you know, in the meantime, you know, I mean, since we're talking about education, you know, there was always sort of an overlap, not just in terms of, you know, finance and business, but you know, there was education exchanges as well. So, yeah, I just wanted to note that.
So, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to take in. how involved this really is beyond anything that people would really realize.
Mark, you're awfully quiet in there. I can't believe you're not asking a question.
Yeah, Mark, where are you at?
Well, here's the other thing. Because education back in the 1940s, 1950s, and all of that was what it was, you know. And I went through the K-12 education system when I did. When did technology, because you mentioned IBM and all that, when did technology itself in the computer age actually start taking a prominent role in all of that as far as behavioral controls and observation goes?
Yeah, so that one document I mentioned, the programmed teaching machines and programmed instruction, so that was – as I mentioned, it was one of the partners involved in that. One of the main partners involved in it was the National Education Association. But actually, it was something called, they had a Department of Audiovisual Instruction. So the acronym for it was DAVI. Okay. And actually, that Davy, the Department of Audiovisual Instruction, would later break off from the NEA to become something that was called, still is called today, the Association for Educational Communications and Technology. And so the acronym for that is the AECT. And the AECT was the main contractor that facilitated Project BEST. And I actually have those contracts. I have Project BEST. Again, both of these are on my database. You can look at the actual documents in detail. You can look at the contracts. And the weird thing about that is that at the time, when the contract was signed, there's a record that suggests that it was still the Department of Audiovisual Instruction. So they would have converted in the late 70s. But one of the people, so it was Susan Phillips, Howard Phillips's wife of the, I think it's Conservative Caucus or something. I can't remember the name of their nonprofit. But she got this document and she contacted them and asked them, you know, well, are you separate or not? Are you a separate entity or not? Well, they're like, well, we actually are all, we shared an office for some time after we officially broke away. And now we're moved right down the street, but we're still in close contact all the time. So it's interesting to note that, you know, that the AECT was basically at one point a branch of the NEA. And in some ways it appears to sort of be, you know, operating in coordination with it to this day, or at least throughout the early 1980s. Now, the reason I bring that up based on your question is that, the reason why it was called the Department of Audiovisual Instruction and then was changed to the Association for Educational Communications and Technology is because that change in acronym was basically changing along with the shift from the old version of education technology, which was audiovisuals, right? It was just like, you know, classroom movie, film scripts and things like that. And Thomas Edison, he thought at one point, we weren't even going to need textbooks anymore. Okay. He thought the textbooks would be replaced just by film scripts and, like, you know, radio shows and records. And basically all your instructional materials would be, you know, either through film or radio or et cetera. And what happens is, you know, with the invention of the modern computer, microprocessor computer, the IBM punch card system being the predecessor to, you know, what we have now as far as digital computers, that sort of shift starts to take place with what I mentioned was, you know, in the realm of ed tech, that's the development of B.F. Skinner's teaching machines. Okay. And as they, you know, worked out, and this was one of the things that they talked about in study 11 was that, you know, one of the things that they had to wait for that was going to take time was basically making the transistors in the microprocessor small enough so that you could actually have one of these in every school, right? And then so that you could actually have, you know, what would become the internet so that all of them could be connected together. You know, the hardware back then was super big and super clunky, okay? And so if you could trace EdTech back to, you know, the audiovisual revolution, but where, you know, Edison thought that the book would be replaced. What's happening now is the textbook companies, they basically just have become the ed tech companies. So you have like a company like McGraw-Hill and Pearson as well. Those are two largest textbook companies. I mean, they're basically, you can, by the way, if you want a textbook, most of the time you're getting an ebook, and I'm pretty sure a lot of times you don't get to like own it. You're just renting it. Right. So you're paying the same amount as if you had the physical book. But you're just renting it so you can access it for a time. And then they integrate it with some of these, you know, these gamified adaptive learning apps. So, you know, where you might have had like worksheets in the back of the book that you would fill out with pencil, you know, you're going to click on the window and the mouse. It's going to give you instantaneous feedback, you'll play a little video game in there for micro learning. And so, you know, Edison, he was correct in the sense that, you know, that it would be a lot of audiovisual stuff involved. But the textbook company didn't go away. They just merged with it and then were integrated with all the IT stuff. And I should, you know, mention one more thing is that in study 11, there's a packet in there. I got this from it was given to Charlotte by a guy named Lawrence P. Grayson. He was the UNESCO liaison with the Department of Education when Charlotte was there. And he was there back when it was the Office of Ed, too. He was at the National Institute of Education, which was a subsidiary of the Office of Education, and it was the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. He's a brilliant guy. I've got all his bio and stuff on my database. And he gave Charlotte this packet. He gave her the Study 11 packet. He was one of the head facilitators for this, as far as the USA was concerned. So he gave her a packet of all the different white papers from the different nation states that were involved. And then along with that, what was in the file that he gave her, there was a packet of education technology journals, so Technological Horizons in Education. And you can read all about this in an article I wrote for Unlimited Hangout. It's from UNESCO Study 11 to UNESCO 2050. That's at Whitney Webb's Unlimited Hangout. But you can look at all the primary documents on my database. And but what was also in there was a packet from the United Kingdom's Open University. And so the UK was one of the members of the Study 11. And what they had, what they were messing with at the Open University, which was an early distance learning college. So this was distance learning now means you're on your Zoom class or you're on your computer at home, you're doing your adaptive learning modules. But distance learning predates the modern computer. Distance learning was basically what Edison was talking about. So you would, it was basically a correspondence course, which, those are even earlier where you would just write letters back. But when they came up with audiovisual, you would sign up at Open University as one example. And they would send you some cassette tapes, or some VHS, and then later down the line, maybe a CD or a DVD. And then based on those lessons, you'd have to do some assignments, and you'd mail the assignments back. And if you did good enough, they'd mail you the next set of audiovisual materials. So Open University today has branched out into something called FutureLearn, which is connected to UNESCO, United Nations Educational and Scientific Cultural Organization. And it's one of the largest platforms or facilitators of online digital learning. But what the Open University was doing in the early 80s, at the time of Study 11, these documents, I have those on my website, and this was in the packet that Grayson gave Charlotte, was something called Project Cyclops, or the Cyclops Project. And it was basically a proto-internet Zoom system. So what you had was you had a table. And they got the chart, like it's graphed out. Some of them are like actually pencil drawings. Some of them are, more graphic arts models. But what you see on there, if you just wanted to skim it instead of like reading all the dense, journal literature, is basically it was connecting all of the different audiovisual systems into a modem that was connected into like a proto internet system. So you had like a TV screen. You had a little device that had a light pen. You had a computer modem. You had a radio where you could hear. You had a microphone where you could speak. And then you had a keyboard where you could type. And the light pen was so you could, like, draw stuff or maybe, like, touch certain, the equivalent of clicking on a mouse, basically. But it was a huge thing. Like, it's sitting on a huge table, and it's got, like, five different heavy pieces of equipment all put together. And so, it was basically your proto-Zoom or Google Classroom, but you couldn't fit one of those in every classroom, and you certainly couldn't fit it in maybe in every home, but, how much money it would cost and to be able to actually – all the stuff you'd need. So, as they mentioned in that project is basically that, well, we just need to wait for, the evolution of what's sometimes called Moore's Law, or another one is the Law of Accelerated Returns, and which is – basically, and Kurzweil talked about this long time ago, Ray Kurzweil, chief of engineering at Google, which is that, the rate at which the transistors in the microprocessors get smaller, the rate at which you're able to process more data on a smaller device, so moving from like vacuum tubes to transistors to like microchips, and eventually nanotech, that, they plotted, around the time of that Macy's conference, that basically around at the turn of the 21st century, that they would be small enough where you could actually put this stuff in everybody's hand, like on a cell phone. So basically what they were, again, the reason why I came to my conclusions about what was the goal of Study 11 and Project BEST was basically just to set up the infrastructure to sort of get everybody acclimated to the idea of using computers for everything. And that, you know, within a few decades, it would be small enough where you could actually have this be the main medium of technology in every classroom and in every home.
Okay, so
Mark got dropped.
Okay, well, I'll get him back. But here's the thing. Here's one thing I wanted to ask you. Do you think that this is detrimental to education? Do you think it's helpful to education if used in the right way? Or do you think it's nothing more than just something to manipulate education in a way, so to speak?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as a teacher, by the way, I've been teaching for 10 years, and you know, and now I'm online because you know I don't want to get the jab, and you know, if I go into the classroom, I'm going to have to get the jab or get the test, and I don't want to play that game either. So I'm having to use these things. And, you know, the first thing is that, you know, one of the most enjoyable parts of teaching, especially, you know, I'm a language arts professor, so is that, you know, it's the dialogue, it's the discussion, it's the actual human interaction, right? You know, and, you know, that's not here. You know, most of the classes are asynchronous. And what that means is, you know, I build a bunch of modules, the students use them, I grade them. They send me emails and, you know, things like that. So every way I interact with them is essentially through text. Like some of them might upload a little picture. So I can look at their face. But there's, you know, there's no human interaction. Right? And so, I mean, just from my perspective, you know, it really takes a lot of the humanity out of it. And, you know, there are some, what they call synchronous classes. Did somebody want to jump in?
Yeah, how would you, what would be your strategy to go back to a strict classical curriculum in the school system?
Hold on, not to interrupt, but we only got about a minute left.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Oh, okay. Well, that's got to be hard to unpack. Yeah, in a minute. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was asking what would be your strategy to go back to a classical curriculum for the students?
Well, I mean, it would take me a minute to unpack how to implement the classical curriculum. But so since we only got a minute, I would say the first step towards that would be, you know, I hate to say this, I'm a public educator. I wanted to write my book as a defense of public education. But at this point, with the lockdowns and the masks and the vaccines, you gotta get your kids out of the school. That's what I would do. I don't have a kid. That's what I would do.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, start to homeschool. And, you know, there's a lot of classical learning resources that are open source. You can get online. There's a guy, Bruce Gore, that does the history of philosophy, teaches eighth graders, you know, and it's really good. You know, it's good for whatever age you are or whatever level you're at. I like to rewatch them sometimes. I've got some lectures and things I do on my YouTube and my BitChute, you know, and I'll be developing some more. So that would be what I would suggest as the first spot. Maybe another.
Okay, we're off the air,
so you guys, you can have some dialogue. Hold, give a few minutes, have a little dialogue. Go ahead.
What the heck is the truth?
Oh, cool.
Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Riff, I've been thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution.